This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Morro Bay, California. Right now we're on the waterfront in Morro Bay. During World War II, Morro Bay was a major training depot for the United States Navy training for amphibious landings. During the war, both Avila Beach and Morro Bay was visited by a high-speed crash boat that was operated by the Army Air Force. The mission of the crash boat was to rescue downed pilots. By some miracle, one of the crash boats survives in pristine condition, and Morro Bay has been blessed to have it come visit, and it is now here for a while. We're here with Larry Newland.
I'm the operations manager for the Morro Bay Maritime Museum, which, by the way, is right across the street from where we're docked right now.
Across the street at the Maritime Museum, you have some incredible static displays.
We do. We have right out in front, it's pretty hard to miss, the DSRV, the Deep Submergence Rescue Vehicle Avalon, one of two that were built during the Cold War for the U.S. Navy.
Basically a mini submarine, a rescue submarine.
It is. It's a rescue submarine to rescue crews from downed nuclear submarines. And they built two of them, the Mystic and the Avalon, and the Avalon is here. It's been here on display for a number of years, on loan from the Navy History and Heritage Command in Washington, D.C.
There's also a tugboat that precedes World War II, and during the dawning days of World War II, it became a hero right here on the Central Coast.
It did. The Alma, the vessel Alma, launched in 1927 near Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco, really gained its fame on the morning of December 23, 1941, when it dashed out from the Cayucos Pier looking for survivors from the sunken Union oil tanker Montebello.
And the Montebello was torpedoed and sunk by a Japanese submarine.
Probably a little north of Cambria, but a little south of Piedras, about 6 miles offshore. The I-21 submarine, one of nine such B-class submarines that were part of the flotilla from Pearl Harbor, tracked her and sunk her with one torpedo, and the Montebello rests on the seafloor at 880 feet today.
To this day, it's sitting on the bottom of the ocean, and that's one of the stories that's to a point untold, in that it was loaded with oil, which is still on board, and that is a future environmental issue.
Well, that was investigated. Not that long ago, there was a coalition of folks put together by Assemblyman Sam Blakesley. And as far as we can tell, the crude oil that it was carrying either dissipated or leaked out slowly, but it does not appear at this time as though it's an impending ecological disaster.
So we got way off track as to why I came to see you today. And that's because of the newest visitor to Morro Bay, the World War II Army Air Force crash rescue boat.
Yeah, the P-520 that we're sitting on is one of 140 85-foot models of U.S. Army Air Force crash rescue boats. They were actually called PRBs, patrol rescue boats. The initial version was 63 feet long, but then this 85-foot version is more or less a scaled-up version of the 63-footers. It's interesting to note that we know that there were some 63-footers based in Morro Bay, probably not 85-footers. However, this boat was based in Avila Beach for 5 or 6 months during World War II.
Have you met any locals that are still alive that remember the crash boats being here?
No, I have not. And in fact, there's a U.S. Crash Boat Association, and the director of that, the fellow that manages that in their website, who rode up from Long Beach with us, said that there are very few crash boat veterans from World War II or even Korea that are still around.
Interesting. So the crash boats, I know they were stationed in Alaska, out in the Aleutians. There were some in the South Pacific, the West Coast. Where else were they?
the Western Pacific, South Pacific, Alaska, the Eastern Seaboard, and the Gulf states. Domestically, where there was an Army Air Force base or air operations near the water, they would post these near the runways, much like you see an ambulance at a football game, because essentially these boats were high-speed floating ambulances from the 1940s. They were meant to go fast and pick up downed air crew.
And I've done some research on the Alaska guys, and one of the huge complaints of the crew members was that they weren't insulated, and they just froze to death, and they prayed to God they were out for a short period of time.
Yeah, they weren't comfortable for those kinds of conditions. And in fact, they designed a 104-foot model. Most of those were dispatched to Alaska because they were a little more comfortable, crew comforts and such. They were slower than this, and they didn't build as many of those. But they used these 85s in Korea, but they weren't used for rescue purposes. They were used for inserting special operations troops behind enemy lines north of the Yalu River.
A visual picture, the closest thing I can liken a crash boat to is a PT boat, kind of that profile and that fast look to it.
They resemble that at first glance, but when you start peeling back the layers of the onion, they really have nothing to do with the PT boat. So they were not PT boats that were modified.
That profile.
The profile
is very similar.
They have that look. They were 5 feet longer than most of the PT boats. The PT boats were 72 and 80 feet, mostly made by Elco, some by Higgins. The people that had the influence on this hull design were the British and the South Africans.
Oh, interesting. Wow. So a real worldwide effort.
It was, and it was really the British that pioneered the use of having integrated marine units in their air force back in the 1920s. But, of course, with the Battle of Britain in, you know, June through the fall of 1940, it really became imperative for them to be able to pick up their pilots out of the English Channel, and they were quite successful with their boats, which were called Vospers.
The crash boat, its reason for existence is all about speed. That being said, the power plant, talk to us about the engines that drive this vessel.
Well, that's one thing they had in common with the PT boats. They were originally designed to have two Packard 12-cylinder engines that put out anywhere between 12 and 1,500 horsepower each. They would burn high-octane fuel or avgas, maybe 100-octane. For your listeners that fly small airplanes with a high combustion engine, you need to increase the octane. And there was a designer at Packard who designed their marine engine line, but most of those engines went for PT boats. So the crash boat program was sort of the poor stepchild that had to wait in line to get its share of the Packard motors.
The top speed in pursuit of a downed pilot would be approximately what?
About 35 knots, plus or minus.
So 40-plus miles per hour?
Approximately. But, of course, it could vary with the boat. It could vary with how much weight. It could vary with the seas tremendously. A cruising speed was about 24 knots, perhaps. And at that speed, it would burn about 140 gallons per hour of this high-octane gasoline.
There must be huge fuel tanks on board.
It carries now about 3,000 gallons of diesel fuel because, of course, it's been repowered with two diesel engines.
So you need a credit card to gas it up.
Yes, you do. When we came up here from Long Beach, I'm guessing we burned somewhere between 350 and 400 gallons of fuel doing 12 knots from Long Beach to Morro Bay.
The crash boat, how long at this point in time, I know this is all new, work in progress, do you imagine the crash boat to be stationed here?
Well, the plan right now is for it to be here through the Morro Bay Harbor Festival.
It's October.
That's always the first weekend of October. So this year, I think that's the 6th and 7th. This year, it's a two-day Harbor Festival, and we're looking forward to that. Long term, we haven't made any plans. You know, for any museum to have something in the water, a floating stock, a floating exhibit, it's really a crucial business decision. You know, a wooden boat, even a highly restored wooden boat, is still a wooden boat in the water.
Back to the vessel itself, one of the most impressive sights walking up is the 250 caliber machine guns. Was that standard defensive armament on board?
It was. The armament changed and evolved over time. Originally, these barbettes, or the so-called gun tubs, had dual 50 calibers on each side. For a while, they put a quad 50 caliber on the bow, and they even, for a while, on some of the boats, not this particular boat, had a 20 millimeter Oerlikon autocannon in the back here near the stern. But that weighed so much and put so much downward pressure on the stern that it impeded performance. And it was really antithetical to the purpose of the boat, which was, again, a high-speed ambulance.
Get in, get out.
Yes, yes.
So that being said, there were never depth charges on board either.
Not this one. There's a picture of one of the 63s mounted with some depth charges on the back on kind of a davit system that held a few of them. But this really wasn't an offensive weapon. This was a weapon for rescue and in Korea for inserting troops quickly and efficiently.
So here we are on the waterfront, directly below the harbor hut.
And I want to put a plug in for those folks. If it wasn't for the harbor hut and the sport fishing folks here for the Endeavor and the other owners here, Mr. Fowler, those folks came together and made this available. It's not easy finding a spot.
Who pays the moorage?
Well, right now it's a combination of the Tourism Board and the Maritime Museum. This had to come together very quickly, and again, I want to commend the folks here that run the dock that wasn't for them, we couldn't pull this off.
They probably like a great view for the diners.
I think so, and that was one of the selling points that I tried to point out to them, and especially on 4th of July when we fired off the guns.
So talk to us a little bit about that. Because your 50 caliber and aircraft armament are fully functional, and you have these great rounds made by Hollywood.
Yeah, these are two simulator 50 caliber Brownings, a design that goes back to John Browning after the World War I, still in use today. It's a basic design, there's variants of it. These particular guns were made by a gentleman in Hollywood who makes special effects, and they run on propane and compressed air, and they're electric, and
there's a flash and smoke. And
they're quite loud.
You got the sheriffs out on you, didn't you?
We did. Well, we gave good notice to everybody, including the Morro Bay PD, but apparently that didn't get transferred to the sheriff's dispatch in San Luis Obispo. So what we did for 4th of July is we gave them a schedule about three times when we were going to fire, and that seemed to work okay. And we got pretty good applause up here on the street.
I bet, yeah.
And 4th of July evening, pretty good muzzle flash, pretty good fireworks. People could hear them all the way across town.
This is open to the public for onboard tours, correct?
That's correct. We're open for the remainder of the summer until further notice. It'll be Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, about 10 to 3. $6 for adults, $4 for youth, and then under 6 is free, youth being 6 to 12.
And a senior rate?
There's no senior rate, but it's free for active or retired military with ID. We're limited by the Coast Guard for the time being of only having 12 paying passengers on at a time.
Even though it's tied up?
Even though it's tied up. Under the Coast Guard rules, the Code of Federal Regulations, a passenger is anybody who pays money to step foot on a boat, whether or not it's underway or tied up at the dock.
One of your most beneficial fundraising enterprises might be to take people out on cruises.
We thought about that, but, you know, operating the boat has its own set of complications. It's a gas guzzler, 1 gallon per mile per engine. As you can see, it doesn't have handrails like a traditional passenger boat.
So you could lose a few.
Well, you'd have to be really on it. I mean, this boat was set up for GIs, and it's not set up for civilian passengers.
So doubtful that there'll be cruises out in the bay.
Anytime soon. Yeah, that's true.
Larry Newland, thank you for sharing. What a great day.
Thanks, and come on down, and if you want information, go to the museum. Tickets and all the information about this is at the Morro Bay Maritime Museum, 1210 Embarcadero, right across the street from where we're at, and by the South T Pier.
The icon would be the stacks.
Yeah, in between. The stacks are just north of us. There's a large paved parking lot. It's pretty hard to miss. There's a big green submarine on a trailer out in front with an orange canopy. It's pretty hard to miss.
And a website?
MorroBayMaritime.org.
Larry, thanks again.
Thank you, Tom.
All right, I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from the waterfront in Morro Bay, California.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world.
Associate producers include Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Molly Blaisdell, San Francisco, and Katya Singel, San Luis Obispo, California.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided in part by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. Donations like clothing, your gently used couch, or still serviceable washing machine generate funds to assist the society in putting food on the table for people in need, or keeping the lights on and families in their homes. To find a St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in your area, visit svdpusa.org.